Desolate, war-torn, and disaster-struck areas of the world. Now the Gift of the Givers Foundation is taking on a new daunting challenge, COVID-19. The disaster response non-governmental organization is celebrating 28th anniversary today. Founder Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman joins us now live to tell us more. Dr. Suleiman, very good morning to you.
Very good morning to you, Blaine, and to your whole team.
So almost three decades, sir, of humanitarian work. Congratulations to you and your intrepid team. I'm sure it's been 28 years of great sacrifice, but as you know, the best view comes after the hardest climb.
Oh, most certainly. You know what? It's something that, you know, it's, yes, it's a challenge. The greater the challenge, the better the soul gets fulfilled. And you find that the teams, whenever they come at us, whether it's the media teams, whether it's the medical teams, whether it's the blanket and tent teams, whenever they leave a disaster spot, they say, this is a life-changing experience. Mm. They say, this is a great spiritual experience. They say it's something that you will give up all the money for to go again and again, because it does something to your soul, it does something to your spirit.
Yeah. How did this all come about, Doc, from a medical doctor to a humanitarian? Describe that transition for us.
Well, for a start, all doctors should be humanitarian, because we're in the business of saving lives. But it didn't start in a conventional manner. I didn't get up one morning and say, let's form an organization, get some board members, write a constitution, do some founding principles. It never worked like that. I never had an intention of forming an organization. In August 91, I met a spiritual teacher in Istanbul. It's a long story. I went back in August 92. Mm. And on Thursday, the 6th of August, 1992, he gives me an instruction around 10 p.m. He says, my son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name will be Gift of the Givers. Mm. You will serve all people of all races, of all colors, of all cultures, of all classes, of any geographical location, and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will not expect anything in return, not even a thank you. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life. Whatever you do is done through you and not by you.
Mm. You know, Doc, as I said in my introduction, your team has traveled to the most desolate, war-torn, and disaster-struck areas of the world. And let me take you back to one of your missions I will never forget, Libya. 2011, I accompanied you and your team to the North African country together with video journalist Clive Reed and the late Suna Fenta. And we were there to report at the time when the heart of Libya's rebellion was beating apace. I remember how we were forced to evacuate Libya's eastern town of Ajdabiya amid threats of fierce fighting there. But still, your medical contingent continued to discharge their duties from nearby Benghazi. How do you and your team hold your nerve when faced with a minefield of challenges, when you don't know exactly where the front line is in terms of the battle? How do you keep calm in the face of danger?
Blaine, all credit goes to the team. The team, whenever we go on a disaster, dangerous mission like a war zone, I try to frighten them as much as possible. I tell them, you can get killed, you can get wounded, your family is at home, please reconsider, please don't come. And they all tell me the same thing. We are people of faith, it doesn't matter which religion you belong to. And even if you don't have a religion, they say we are people who believe in nature.
Mm.
We know God Almighty will protect us wherever we go. In that mission itself, and remember I told you this is a spiritual calling, a spiritual mission. When we get to a certain area, I get inspiration. When everybody was running away, I told them we don't have to run, we'll work now. The point I told them to move out, 2 hours later, the bombs fell in that area, in that stadia.
Yeah.
When we moved to Benghazi, again I said we will work there. A few hours after we left, exactly at the windows where we were standing, light was shot through the windows. It's not some cleverness. I mentioned, the teacher said, whatever happens, comes to you and not done by you.
Mm. You know, speaking about keeping calm in the face of danger, the global coronavirus pandemic has had such a profound impact on all South Africans. Your organization is doing a lot of work on the ground. What has been your experience? What has been your team's experience with regard to the fight against coronavirus?
Anxiety. Anxiety has been the biggest challenge in the country. Remember before it came to South Africa on March the 5th, the worldwide media was driving it since December from China. And then you saw what happened in Italy, in Spain, in France, in Turkey, in the USA. And the overriding media was about death, death, death. And that drove tremendous fear, not only in a civilian population, but a medical population that could be used to dealing with dangerous diseases. When hepatitis came out, when HIV came out, guys were scared, but they dealt with it. But COVID-19 brought a different mindset. Doctors closed their rooms. Specialists in private hospitals didn't go to work. Private hospitals were sort of 80% closed because of the great anxiety. And people at homes, families, were terrified. And especially when someone passed away from neighbor or family itself. So we had to deal, and we still deal with anxiety in the medical field and in the non-medical field. The big challenge that came was the hunger. Not in our 28-year history, we've never seen such hunger and so many calls for food.
You know, Doc, this is such a wily virus. It's been described as the perfect virus. It's very serious, but it doesn't kill all of its hosts, so it can survive. It's highly contagious, and it causes multiple organ problems in certain individuals. What do you make of government's strategy for fighting this disease?
To be fair to government on the one side is nobody knows how to deal with this virus. We don't have any experience. You've seen first world countries, what it's done to America, the number one economy in the world. But all the technology, all the machines, the best health system in the world, what it has done to them. In South Africa, we have a problem, an economic crisis, even before COVID-19 came. Our health systems were not ready and are still not ready. And you find that we had a shortage of medical personnel. There's a problem. The government should have fixed that first. Because when you said you're doing lockdown, the lockdown was to prepare the health system. But we failed, to put it bluntly, miserably, when it came to providing additional staff in terms of healthcare workers and nurses and backup support. And that's why you're seeing this absenteeism, you're seeing the stayaways, you're seeing the protest. It's a big failure. The second big failure was, you know, PPEs.
Yeah.
If you don't have personnel, you want to see the patients. You can have all the equipment, all the hospital, first world service. But if you don't have healthcare workers, who's going to see the patients? And a big announcement was made, big funds were set up. And there's enough PPEs. And so much brought to the country. Yes, they've been brought into the country. But did they get to the hospital? Did they get to the people who need it most? And the answer is 180 health facilities. Every time we come on PPEs, or even a thermometer, doctors, the nurses, the CEO start dancing. Why would professional people start dancing? It means they haven't received it.
So PPE is very, very important in the fight against COVID-19. We need to protect our frontline workers with regards to this disease. We need to box in this virus. How do we do that effectively? Strategic testing. That's just one part of it. From your knowledge, talk to us about the tests, Doc, currently being used.
Blaine, in terms of testing, I think the virus has already outclassed us. It's gone. We get the results after 10 or 12 days. You saw in St. Augustine's Hospital in Durban, one guy infected 135 people. Can you imagine 10,000 people? You're given the results 10 days later. How many people are you going to trace? Tracing is over. We're wasting our time. There's no point. We'd rather wait to save lives.
Yeah.
Because those who are sick will come to hospital. That's where you should be ready for them.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to go to them. Will come to you. So you need healthcare professionals. They're getting burnt out. They're dying. They're getting ill. They're getting knocked out. Again, the emphasis, it sounds like a cliche or a boring word now. Hospitals, medical staff need the best PPE of quality, of unrestricted quantity, not only in the emergency department, but across all disciplines, pediatrics, gynecology, obstetrics, surgery, orthopedics, ophthalmology, ENT, because you don't know where the virus is coming.
Yeah.
And PPE is not only for doctors and nurses. It's for the coffee lady, for the tea guy, the porter, for the cleaner, because anyone can spread it. Secondly, you need to do PCR testing. You asked me about testing. We do PCR testing. There are machines that can give a result in 45 minutes. You can test healthcare workers, and you can test high risk or high suspect patients immediately, so they don't jam the beds up in hospital.
Yeah.
You're not sure they're COVID-19 or not. We're using this very successfully in Baragwan Hospital. And the third thing is, like pulse oximeters, simple device can tell you the oxygen level in a patient, whether it's critical or not. If it's critical, all you do is provide high flow oxygen machines. And we're pulling out many of those, and you just need to configure the oxygen better, and we're bringing Efrox in to some of the to see how to configure that.
So we're many
going to the virus coming to you now.
So many metrics, so many variables in the fight against COVID-19. Humanitarian work entails helping people without discrimination, being conscious of their needs. And I guess the question we all have to ask ourselves, especially during this time, Doc, is what are you doing for others? Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, keep on keeping on, sir. Once again, happy 28th anniversary to the Gift of the Givers. Blessings to you and the family. Good health during this difficult time. Thank you.
Amen and thank you.
All right. Imtiaz Suleiman, founder of the Gift of the Givers Foundation, talking to us about the need for proper personal protective equipment for the frontline workers so that they can keep on keeping on with regards to the fight against COVID-19. What are the numbers so far? We give you the numbers every day, but we can't get numb to these numbers. This is what the other fear of, the fear of fatigue, the fear of forbearance in this fight against COVID-19, something that the doc also touched on as well. Some of the numbers, confirmed cases so far, 529,877 cumulative cases. The good news is that the recovery rate, as we have it from the department, is creeping up at 70%, over 70% now. So that's the good news in terms of, you know, the recovery. People are recovering from this. The active cases are going down, which is good, which is good. But the president also talking about certain provinces that seems to be stabilizing. The caveat is that it might be too soon to get very happy about this because things can change. What about the second wave that people are talking about? Not only here in South Africa, but around the world. That's the worry. If we stop doing what we're doing now in terms of the three W's, wearing a mask, watching your space, washing your hands, then we might run the risk of it exponentially rising again. So that's a concern as well. All right.